pretty, and we like it, because new computers are good. Old computers suck. Not only are they built out of boring old components that nobody even wants anymore, they're slow and draggy, and the hard disk is almost always completely full and fragmented up, and they take a long time to start up, and a long time to shut down, and a long time to use them in between.
An old computer doesn't
at all. And yet, all it takes to turn a new computer into an old computer is maybe a year or so of use. Then you might have to reformat it and wipe it and start over, which could extend its useful life a little bit. But this aging process takes time, and it doesn't happen overnight.
Conspiracy
Things like file system fragmentation
that
might accumulate can take weeks or months to happen before you really even notice them. The slide into middle-age mediocrity is a gradual one, but the pull is inexorable unless you're actively fighting it every day. But we all know it doesn't always take months or years for a new computer to slow down. All it takes is some bad software and a little time. The worse the software, the shorter the time it takes. If you were to run a program like a word processor that simply never freed the memory it was using along the way and then kept actively using the program to edit your document, let's say it would last about 5 minutes before it would have used up all the free memory that were available on the system before coming to a halt and running out entirely.
Crappy operating
The thing is, though,
system.
People don't actually write software that badly. It's a contrived example because nobody writes a word processor that doesn't free any of the memory it allocates. But mistakes do happen. I could envision how somebody might create a word processor that frees all of its memory properly, except in some weird edge case where they have a bug that they don't even know about. Maybe when there are alternate Canadian spellings for a word like color or check, the program forgets to free those, and so it leaks a little bit of memory every time you scroll past one of them. After a couple of hours of editing, let's say, a great deal of memory has been leaked by the nefarious Canadian vowels. Once physical RAM is exhausted and you start paging into virtual memory, your PC will become rather glacial, all brought to you by the letter U. Now, what happens to that memory? Is it gone forever? Do we need to reboot the computer to get it back? Actually, the answer is neither, because the operating system is still in charge. It may not have any idea what a program intended to do with the memory or why it allocated it at all, but the operating system, be it Windows, Mac, or Linux, has dutifully recorded and kept track of every allocation made in a long list. It's like a bank ledger of every outstanding memory allocation that the process has ever made and not yet returned. When the program exits, the operating system knows the program is done with that memory.
For people that are born after 1985, and that wasn't coincidental, you can't trust anyone, any millennials. There, in the enterprise, computers used to be these big-ass computers called mini-computers, and PCs are known as microcomputers, okay? And these things were running on various different computers, whether it was the digital fax computers. There was these different, mini-computers, and they laughed at the PC market, which I think they, if a rational person, which I know is not, I don't know how to describe it, but basically, this is what happens when I go off script. Basically, Microsoft shoplifted VMS because what happened was OS2 wasn't getting anywhere at Microsoft. They stole this guy named Dave Cutler from DEC, who worked at the Left Coast operations in Washington State, and this guy basically took all the code that was legal to reproduce. Reverse engineer to make Windows NT. And the reason why they chose WNT, Windows NT, because if you put WNT and VMS, it's just one letter change when you think about it. And they basically shoplifted this technology. Now, say what about Ken Olson and how he said that no one needs computers. He was right to a certain extent, but they totally missed the small market. I digress. Let's let this guy talk.
Return it to general use. It runs through its list of memory that was allocated to or by that program and returns it to the pool for everyone's use. Even if the program lost track of the memory it was using, the operating system will still have an authoritative accounting list. Of course, there are two problems with this approach. The first is that nobody wants to have to periodically stop, close, and then restart the programs they're using. Another is that you don't know how much memory the program is using or that it might have leaked. And the third is that programs might not be responsive enough to cooperate. What if a program allocated a bunch of memory, leaked it, and then due to some bug or other reason, failed to respond appropriately to user input? First off, you couldn't be sure which process had allocated the memory, and second, you'd have no way of getting it back from it, even if you did. And that's where Task Manager comes in. In fact, that's one of the big reasons why I wrote it. Back in the early days of Windows NT, all of the software programs that ran on NT were very new, and it was common to discover bugs and defects in them. Programs could leak memory or handles or other resources. Your machine might slow down and start to act erratically, but unless it's obvious somehow, you have no real way of knowing what process is misbehaving. Task Manager makes it easy to identify programs that aren't playing nicely. If you sort by the memory used column, only discover that your word processor is using gigabytes of memory even without a document loaded, that's a good indication that the program has a memory leak or other defect. Same deal with handles and other resources. Anything that can be allocated can be leaked, and if it's a limited resource of some kind, Task Manager will help you figure out which process is the culprit. Once you know which process is causing the problems, you can use Task Manager to end it, which will return everything back to the system, just as I described earlier, because the operating system has kept track of everything. But who's watching the watchers? And by that, I mean, what if the operating system itself leaks memory? Or more likely, some other piece of code that gets to run in the special privilege mode known as Ring Zero, like a driver does. In Ring Zero, code has no recourse to the law. If your video driver leaks memory, whether it's system memory or video memory, it's gone forever. Well, until you reboot. Aha! And now you know one of the very real reasons that rebooting can be so beneficial. It forces the operating system itself to start over, which means it starts with a clean slate and zero memory and resource leaks on the kernel side. Memory and resource leaks on the kernel side last until the next reboot, and that's a big factor in why rebooting can often make your computer feel like new again. After resource leaks, the next most common problems you'll find with application software are logic errors that cause it to either lock up entirely or use a ton of CPU. Again, Task Manager arrives to the rescue with the ability to save the day in two ways. First, it allows you to identify which program is using a disproportionate amount of CPU. By that, I mean disproportionate to the amount of work that it's actually doing. If Adobe Premiere is rendering video, it's normal to use all the CPU it can get. It's not normal for Notepad to do so, however. CPU hogs can be a little more challenging to detect if they're running on a single core and your system has many cores. If you have 16 cores and one program is CPU bound, it could be wasting an entire core and yet using less than 7% of the total available CPU, so it wouldn't be immediately obvious. That's why you should switch to the Task Manager performance mode that shows you individual CPUs and look for the core that's closest to 100%. If you find it and it seems abnormal for that program, your next task is to find a program in the details view that is using about a core's worth of the total CPU. From there, once identified, you can make the decision on what to do next. By far, your best option is to just close that program, ideally after saving your work to a new file, just in case all that CPU usage is a hint that there's corruption of some kind afoot in the process. No point in overwriting your existing good copy with new bad data. Ask me how I know these things. If the program won't respond properly, that's where Task Manager provides its second major service and the ability to terminate a program against its wishes or without its knowledge. Normally, this is a bad idea, as it doesn't allow the program a chance to save any information at all. But if the program is bunged and you just want your machine back, terminating the offending process can be a wise approach. As soon as you do, as discussed before, any resources it's holding are made freely available to other programs again. Terminating the rogue program should return your machine to normal again. And if not, there's always rebooting. This notion of rebooting to reclaim leaked resources does not just extend to memory. It's also true of other constrained system resources, such as handles and windows and sockets and file objects and so on. The only thing that doesn't really get reset entirely to factory original, of course, is the hard disk. Now, the disk side of things is more than I want to get into for this video, but odds are by now you have some inkling of how hard disk fragmentation can slow down your disk access. When a disk becomes fragmented, data that is normally used together winds up scattered all over the disk, and so the heads have to travel a further distance with more changes of direction over more time to read it in. Having the data broken up and scattered around the disk slows access, and that can be true of memory as well. Now, virtual memory acts as a layer of indirection above them, but there are still physical pages with actual memory addresses. If memory references are close together, you have a greater chance of your CPU cache being more effectively used than if they're randomly distributed around in memory. The bigger problem with fragmentation, however, is known as heap fragmentation. It's when there are no large, contiguous blocks of memory left over, even though lots of memory is still free. To illustrate, I'm going to use a somewhat theoretical example. Imagine a program has allocated all of the free memory in the system in 1 megabyte chunks. Then it returns all but every fourth chunk. Then you'd have 75% of your memory free, but you'd be unable to allocate any memory larger than 3 megabytes. You might have dozens of gigabytes free, but allocating 4 megabytes would fail. Now that's an extreme example of heap fragmentation. And you can do it by the K as well, not just by the megabyte. Short of meticulously unwinding every one of those allocations and or terminating their owners, the only way to fix it is to reboot the system. When you freshly boot a computer in a network environment, there are other benefits as well. Your computer's host name will be refreshed in the DNS tables around the LAN. You'll get a chance at a new IP address or at least a new lease on your old one.
Okay.
Routing tables might be created or refreshed. Your default gateway is reset and so on, all potentially fixing network issues that you might have been experiencing along the way. The list of things that get reset by a reboot is long and sometimes not obvious. For example, the clock is reloaded from the battery-backed-up hardware clock. Since software clocks drift over time, your time will be most accurate right after a reboot when it's been synced to your hardware clock or perhaps an SNTP server. When your system comes up freshly booted, there are plenty of resources available. As long as you haven't unduly cluttered up your system with startup programs or contracted a virus, not much to be running yet and there won't be any windows open. That, combined with all the factors we've talked about so far, combined to make that just booted feeling a rather special one. Now, if you'd only clean up the icons on your desktop, you'd really be onto something. Over time, however, you'll find that even a freshly booted PC can be slow due to factors ranging from disk fragmentation and registry errors to malware, but those are topics for a future episode. If you want to see it, please be sure you're subscribed to my channel. I'm not selling anything and I don't have any Patreons. I'm
getting hacked, okay? And I'm going to tell you, I find it really irritating. Microsoft Windows, I have to use it in some environments, okay? The server is, you know, Chinese grade, Chinese knockoff. That's what I think of Microsoft. I always thought of it that way. They took carbon copies and then made a shitty implementation. It's always been this way. Same with Windows NT. When Windows 7 and Windows Server 2008, where they were trying to make a poor man's Linux, it's like, you guys are just... You made a cheap operating system. You guys should be fucking damned. You guys have made... You're a disgrace to society. I'd be very blunt with this. This show's not going to be as funny tonight because I have a lot of frustrations. This guy... He's the reason why we are a dumb nation where we consume. We spend. The PC's not working, just buy a new one. If the thing is sold, just buy a new one. Throw away. This guy works in software. How does he know anything about hardware? 2021, Windows 10. If I can't get an IP address, my mother has to up her works, all her work to get back. So she has to log out of her Microsoft Office 365, get everything out to just get a new IP address because the routing table is mixed up. So that means things have to go down. Microsoft doesn't like uptime. They don't like, okay, they were so jealous that VMS, OpenVMS as well, fax operating systems, as well as NetWare, of which was actually based around DOS, believe it or not. They were probably jealous that the thing was up, could be up for 4,000 days or longer. So they just wanted to make your life a living hell. This is the reason why I'm not in IT and I don't like being in IT. I think Microsoft led to people doing the wrong things and doing the right things. This company, again, is a third world hellhole. And as Steve Jobs called it, to Bob Cringely in 1995, they make third-rate products. You have to go outside the Microsoft bubble to really understand how much you don't miss it. And I don't miss being in Microsoft. I just find it really irate where these things can't run. You have to in order to start to shut down. That's been a running joke. My ex used to make jokes about Microsoft all the time. She was a Microsoft zealot. She hated Microsoft. And, when you do an update, it has to go offline. You can't do a patch and, refresh it, which, in these other operating systems, it's like restarting a process, a daemon, etc. And again, I could have a Mac OS 10 instance from like classic OS 10 to probably the current one. I don't have to restart my Mac to re-clear my ARP cache. I could do it on my mother's if we had we don't have a Windows 10 at home. I have Windows 7. I have several Windows 7 instances because I have to, only because I have to. And I could clear the ARP cache because it's in a domain controller. Yes, it's in the domain controller, and I'm an admin. But I'm not an admin to my mother's work notebook. So it's really irate. And Microsoft has lowered. I have been around long enough to see people that learned on a PC be completely dependent on somebody to hold their hand because the only computer they learned was the right and wrong way. And people like this Dave individual has created millions of helpless technical users under the age of 50. Okay, we're talking about Gen Xers being scared of doing the right or wrong thing. And you have to be the high-pitched, loving, carry, lovey-dovey guy, the feminine guy, to help bail these people out. This guy, he was some mansplaining. Not only that, he was talking with marbles. He's probably talking task managers, the acronym. This guy's a disgrace. This guy is a fucking disgrace. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we're going to go to another disgraceful YouTuber, which it will make you cringe. Tonight is it's a cringy double feature, cringy, fringy double feature. Coming up next.